today on questions and answers that I have been waiting to dive into since the whole Uptown Mommy project began. You have heard Mommy Councilperson Margot Puffenberger on the podcast a couple of different times. Last time she was here, the new mayor, Jim McDonald, was on. This time she has served me up. I believe he is the city administrator. You might be familiar with his name, Patrick Birch. He was in the news because he was kind of the backbone of the Uptown Mommy reimagining, and he has lots of answers to questions that I think many of us were asking. Giving answers to angry people sitting on Conant as to why they were sitting in such congestion. Patrick has some wonderful answers. He's a super bright guy. Some of the discussion is going to get very technical, so if you want to listen at two speed, I get that, or zoom through it. But to be quite honest, over the course of the Uptown Mommy project, and when I was following it, I'd read stuff from former mayor Richard Carr and Patrick, and I guess some others here and there. And granted, the news can't grab every word that these people are saying or be at every single council meeting and blah, 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 blah. But spending 25 minutes listening to Patrick and the reasoning why X, Y, and Z got done and why there can't be another arch, even if they do win Strongest Town, that's why Patrick will be on here in just a moment to advocate for votes for Strongest Town. Mommy has a pretty tough matchup in this Strongest Town competition, and just go to strongesttown.com. They have a tough competition in Edmonton, Alberta. The other two cities in this Final Four competition are Selma, North Carolina, and a place I've never heard of in Nebraska. Mommy, many people are probably unfamiliar with it outside of the area. Like, I just questioned those other places. I wonder if it's bigger than those two places I just named. It's definitely not bigger than Edmonton, which is a fairly large, popular, well-known city in Canada with a legendary hockey team. I look back at following the story within the last couple of years, and I think, wow, you know what? People might have been less irate with what's going on if Patrick could have given me, it could have provided the answers he gave to me, the explanations he gave to me, over the course of time. And maybe he did in some council meetings or some rallies that people attended. But as you'll hear, he has now completely turned me off the town hall meetings, and he's 1,000% correct because they are a live version of Facebook comments. So very, very intelligent guy, loves what he does when it comes to building and redesigning cities. And before we get to that, it finally happened here. I was wondering if my comments were really going to upset a lot of people, because if there's two professions that are very popular here where we live, definitely people who work in the medical field, and also we have a lot of people who work in education. It finally happened here, which was a teacher is no longer working at her job. I believe it was Springfield, because of her OnlyFans account. I believe she resigned on her own volition. A couple of things to start. Remember, it's not just me representing my work, even when I'm not on the clock. With so much of our lives being so public, even if you have made your pages private to a degree, you are almost always representing your employer and anybody else who is in your orbit at almost all times. Okay? So there's one thing. And I completely understand the separation here, and I'll get to why with another sports analogy. I don't know if she did it because of most of the speculation people have posited. Pay teachers more money. She wouldn't have to do this if teachers made more money. I gotta believe, and my perspective is different because I have a public profile. So I grasp how quickly people can find things out or learn things. But we also live, we know that a lot of people know each other's business here, not just in the smaller places, Perrysburg and Maumee and Sylvania, where gossip can travel fast, but even in Toledo. This is the smallest city I've ever lived in as far as how quickly information, rumors, gossip, and other things can travel. It has there a small town veracity of communication. There is a voracious communication trail as if this were a one stop light town. Yes, that's the way to go. So people said this woman is a very good teacher. She's done it for a couple of decades. I think language arts spoke very highly of her. So she seems like a bright lady. A lady bright enough to know someone's going to find this out. Now, people in the comments were like, you know, look at the dirty old man looking. Why were they on there? Well, people can be on there. That's on them and whether they're violating their marriages, relationships, whatever. But people can be on there and you can put yourself on there to get work or in any questionable situation. And by the way, I think many people, except for deeply conservative people, small c, have moved beyond any kind of moral outrage of people doing this. I think it's a wonderful, as somebody who is in support of prostitution, I think this is a great way for people to make money. I just spoke to somebody who I know online who did some pretty graphic videos, and she's raking in $2,000 a month. I think paying off student debts, and she's a super smart, bright scientist. So good for her. So obviously I have no problem with this woman doing it, the teacher. I just question, did you think people really weren't going to find out? I mean, unless you don't tell a soul, again, you might think that person will keep your secret, but sometimes it just comes out and then it turns into a nuclear bomb. You see the mushroom cloud of gossip and rumors, and it's spreading around. So I don't know if it was so much somebody was like hunting her, or maybe they heard a rumor and then they looked her up. I equate this to athletes, and that's the easiest example because this is what's in the news most. If you're Aaron Rodgers, you can do all the things that he did, even though he was injured, and he would have talked a lot less had he not been injured. If you're a star player on a team, you get more latitude for bad behavior. But if you're the 45th player on a roster, or the 23rd guy on a baseball team, or the 14th guy on the NBA roster, and you get a DUI, there is a hint of any kind of domestic violence or anything that puts you and the team in a bad light, you're gone because the stuff is a distraction. Like I said, if you're at the top of a roster, and this applies across all professions for the most part, we just don't hear about it. The more valuable, the more revenue, the more valuable you are to a company, the more money you bring in, the more latitude you have to slip up. But I can see why schools separate from people who do OnlyFans. Because it can be a distraction. And there are already, we've talked about this, I've posted on my socials, there are already enough distractions, cell phones, parents keeping their kids on tethers in the middle of class trying to speak to them, anxiously worried for some valid reason, but mostly not. There are already enough distractions in the schools, so this would create one more. So I hope to God that she did this because she is about to cruise into retirement and she wanted some free advertising. As that woman I mentioned said, most of these stories turn out exactly like that. These people become viral and they make a lot of money when these stories hit the press. So you're not a teacher anymore or whatever else, but you're making a lot of money on that. And you also raise the profile of teachers should be paid more. So let me dive into that real fast. Teachers are in a unique position. This is going to sound very cold, but I think it's mostly accurate. And obviously, I 110% support teachers. They're underpaid, overworked, because they love their students so dearly. We all know about stories of them paying into their own classroom, and they're underappreciated. And now, in many cases, they're under attack because parents are overreaching with their entitlement, and in some cases, have no idea. They're imagining things when it comes to things in the classroom, or they have objections that maybe they shouldn't really have. In some cases, sure, appropriate. And I'm not going to dive into that. But teachers, and here's the cold phrase, teachers don't generate any money. I make a little bit of money for the radio station. Denny at 93.5 WRQN generates a lot of money for that radio station. He gets Latitude to be a distraction because he is a big time. He's earned that over decades of being a radio icon here in Toledo. He brings in money. People advertise on his show. I cannot advertise with a really talented teacher because I can't put that on the internet and show their classroom and rack up views or anything like that. So we can't take a teacher or a classroom and treat it like a minor league baseball wall, outfield wall with tons of advertising. If I'm not mistaken either, most teachers, especially in the public education system, can't get bonuses. Like if Denny or I hit certain ratings metrics, you get bonuses. In sports, pretty common. You pitch a certain amount of innings, you win a certain award, you can make more money. You get bonuses. It is incentive driven. There's a great deal of merit with that. But teachers, it's what, how long you've been there, tenure as well. That's the only way to get more. So they don't bring in money. So my question is, and then we'll get to Patrick. I know you want to pay them more, and this is it's an important job. We need to pay teachers what they're worth. Well, that's a very subjective way to put it. Because as I've said, if 20,000 people wanted to tune in to watch Mrs. Jones teach her English class as we tune in for games and TV shows, well, she'd get paid her worth. But again, there's no views there. So she makes $42,000 and can never exceed that by much as cost of living rises faster than her salary and wages. So she has to go do X, Y, or Z. So how do we pay them more? School budgets, we hear about school levies all the time. The Ottawa Hills one passed. Perrysburg did not. I just read the BG one won't cost people as much for the high school. And TPS is preparing, I think, a $6 million levy for this fall's ballot because the reasoning is, and I am, school choice is over my head. There's a lot that I have to catch up with that. But their reasoning is school choice is taking money away from funds that we would get and reallocating it elsewhere. Okay, I will take that at face value for now. One way or the other, there's less money going to TPS, so they have to ask voters for the money. So how do you want to pay teachers more without, as what I just explained, taking away resources from other places where money in the educational system is needed or without asking taxpayers for more money? Because my first thing to challenge anybody that says teachers need to be paid more, pay teachers more money. Okay, are you willing to pay more out of your paycheck in taxes? Because that's, I think, mostly how these people, how our educational systems run through our tax dollars. I'm not talking about private schools and things like that. That's a little different. And they probably get paid better. But the only way I can see, so let's find a solution to pay teachers better, comes out of our pocket, or to do a deep drill down on how we're spending our money in school districts. With schools always asking for levies, I gotta think that most are spending responsibly. You see the list of things that will be cut. Like if the levy doesn't pass, we're gonna lose 3 teachers, 2 maintenance people, a couple of part-time people, not gonna be able to pay subs as much. Now look, maybe some of these schools are misappropriating funds, not in a malicious way, just irresponsible, not making economically wise decisions. And that deserves to be asked by taxpayers. But I just don't know how you pay teachers more money. Let's talk to Patrick Birch and give you all the answers about Uptown Maumee and what's been happening there and when it's going to end. So Maumee is in the top 4 of this Strongest Towns competition, which kind of came out of nowhere. Even for me, it's not like we're voting on the zoo as we do every year or hearing about how Ottawa Hills is the best school district in the country. What is this?
Well, this Strong Towns movement is, this gentleman is a, he wrote 2 books, one called Strong Towns. His name is Chuck Marone. Years ago, there used to be a movement called New Urbanism. It's kind of an urban pro-density infrastructure efficiency movement. Well, Chuck kind of took it a step further. He wrote a book called Strong Towns that talks about how you integrate, transportation, finance, infrastructure, and call it a complex human habitat, mm-hmm. which is what cities and communities really are, because people tend to believe that the problems we face every day are caused by one or two separate variables, when in fact, I don't think anybody really truly believes that if they think about it. Even if our kids do something we don't want them to do, I'm guessing they didn't do it just because of one factor, right? That we all make decisions based on, if we're going to build a house, we don't look at it and just say cost. We look at a ton of different things, right? So what he's saying is people make mistakes when they look at a complicated problem. As when I mean complicated, I mean one that has one or two variables that cause a specific outcome. Here, if it's complex, it's a problem that even the fix becomes adaptable to a problem it faces, right? So cities do that because human beings run cities and they control cities and they live there and they play there and they work there. So what he did, he wrote a book after that called Confessions of a Recovering Engineer. He's a civil engineer that decided that, oh my gosh, I'm telling people that I'm making their roads safer by widening it. And the reason that is because for years and years and years, the civil engineering field, at least transportation engineering, was that we are trying to make motorists safer, assuming that pedestrians would just take care of themselves. And at some point, like we did here in Maumee, as we put out the message that isn't just about road dieting Conan Street, which we think is important to show what we're trying to accomplish, but it's also about, are we narrowing a street so that 30 years from now when the street has to be redone, we are not replacing stuff we don't have to replace.
Right.
We don't need those things, right? So that's, it's like when Myers reduced 30% of their asphalt, when they went to redo their parking lot, we asked them to reduce their parking spaces they don't need, because big box stores, they used to produce parking lots for Black Fridays that no longer exist.
Yeah.
Right? And we're chasing this ideal of a nuclear family when most families aren't nuclear anymore. Right, we have to start rethinking how we build housing, how we participate in density, because you and I both know that when you build a road with water and sewer, it costs the same whether there's 500 people in a 500-foot stretch paying for it or one. Still costs the same. It just costs each person different amounts. So that's called infrastructure efficiency. So that's our whole – what council does here is we measure every decision we make based on – some infrastructure efficiency or financial stability process. So we don't look at something as mutually, we don't look at one problem mutually exclusive from another problem. And that's the Strong Towns movement. And that's what this award is about. It's those communities that truly embrace looking at this concept. And it's kind of like, you don't realize you have a problem until you admit you have a problem. So when I look at this and I say, he gives a statement in his Confessions of Recovering Engineer book. He says, you know, every city and community are insolvent. They just don't know it yet.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I tell you, I can't imagine what Toledo has, but from our perspective, we have roughly 117 miles of road. We have 400 miles of water and sewer main. If you'd have had to replace that or severely, heavily maintain it, you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars in the next 30 years. Who can afford that? And that's in a town of 13,500 people. Could you imagine in a place like City of Toledo or Dayton or Columbus or Cincinnati or, God forbid, San Diego or New York? I can't even imagine. It's probably in the trillions.
Yeah. To
and
your,
that's what it means.
To, I deal with, my focus is on a lot of social issues. And the one thing that I've honed in on over the years from listening to a lot of my friends is, it like you said, it's all connected. And if we can make a dent in a couple of these problems, maybe we'll make some headway, but it's never one thing. And something you've illustrated that I think the, and I do have a couple of questions I want to run by you as this process is almost over, of Uptown Maumee. One, even if you figure out all those complex issues, you talked about how you have to build a place, you have to be a steward of the future in the present. And I think I'm not big on humans because they're very emotional and they cannot read data well, and they have a hard time with objective decisions. Margo could tell you about me and roundabouts. I'm on team roundabout and road diet, but people have a hard time because they're very selfish, and I get that. They have a hard time understanding that you have to build on me for now and the future. And to your most recent point is, I think some people overlook that the fact that a lot of our cities, Toledo, and then, you know, the little halo effect ones around them, like Maumee, these places are like 150 years old in some cases. And in many ways, the infrastructure hasn't been touched in years and decades. And the cities don't have the budgets like they used to when we were this young, adolescent building country. And it's unfortunate, but my thinking is, we live here, and unfortunately, we have to pay for it. And all we can ask of people like you is that you handle the money and make the best decisions properly.
That's correct. And if you don't have people knowledgeable in these kind of concepts, I mean, think about it. This is what Chuck calls an infrastructure Ponzi scheme that started 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? We develop a parcel. We create this big road for a big company. The company comes in. They don't pay enough taxes because of the incentives to even take care of the road they was put in for them. So you need two more companies to locate to sustain the infrastructure for the company you did before them. And then the infrastructure you put in for the two companies, you now need four companies to support them. I mean, it's a reverse Ponzi. It's actually a Ponzi scheme. And the issue is, people go to jail for Ponzi schemes.
Yes, they do.
Officials don't. Public officials don't when it comes to this, because nobody, it's incremental enough where people don't get it, right? And they're selling out. And when people used to talk about, you heard about this with Social Security all the time. Oh, you're selling out your children, blah, blah. If the issue is, or with federal debt, we're way beyond. But that gives you a sense. I mean, if you were to capitalize assets, which the federal government now requires us to do, which we never had to do 20 years ago with the new gas fee rules, you have to start capitalizing infrastructure. And people, even if you gave them the facts, in many cases, people read that data incorrectly. And I'm a big proponent to say, you know, data doesn't lie. We lie about it.
Yeah. I like to say numbers don't lie, but we can make them say certain things.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Statistics, there's statistics and damn lies, right? So, I mean, I can sit there and tell you that something works, but unless I've looked at enough variables, and I can never, I'm a stats guy. So I look at this and I say, I can't prove anything. All I can do is rule out things I know not to be true, right? That's what academic research is about. When I did my dissertation, that's what it's about. I simply took a couple of things. I did a multivariate analysis and a regression on it and decided, oh my gosh, the things I was testing that I thought had relationships to this problem do not. And then I say, for future study, somebody should not do what I did because it doesn't have any relationship. There's no, it's pretty spurious. So those are the kind of things we do. We don't think in terms of what we do in the public sector as affecting people's lives, right? For when I have Conant Street and nobody can cross the street, or I go to Gibbs and the Anthony Wayne Trail and I have 107 feet for a child to cross a road to get to Gateway Middle School across the Anthony Wayne Trail, that's a problem. That's a huge problem because vehicles have been known. I mean, that's why we even design our roads and streets. We don't like trees too close to the road because they don't give way real far hitting them. But we put in light poles, we put in mast arms, and we have shear bolts. The only thing we don't, and those things, when a car hits them hard enough without killing the driver typically, those poles will shear off because they're meant to do that. Unfortunately, there are other things in those right-of-ways walking on walks that have shear bolts called shins and tibias and fibulas and femurs that give away even quicker than a shear bolt on a mast arm. That's what we're trying to get across. And it isn't just about a street and a road diet, although people want to make it about that. It's about recognizing that there has to be a balance between motorists and pedestrians. There has to be a balance between finance and long-term obligations that you're hiding because it's not clear you could ever maintain what you built. Those kind of things. So,
This is the first time I've heard you speak. I have read a lot of your words, and I'm picking up what you're putting down. I found it fascinating. One of the things that I was one of my champion lines of the road diet and what was changing in Uptown Maumee was some of that prescience. Like, if you paid attention, and again, most people don't. Most people can't follow things as closely as you certainly do in your job, and what I do to try to get people as best information from people like you as I can. But Uptown Mommy was not trying to, as you said, intentionally disrupt people's lives, but you were competing with, I like to say, like all the F's, Fremont and Findlay, and there's even places like Defiance, all these other outlying towns that are building up their downtowns to make them more appealing. I think in Fremont, there's like an outdoor amphitheater, so it's going to be more than the Haunted Hydro now. And if someone like you in your position, and the former mayor and the current mayor would have just, and city council would have just sit there and let things be as they were, so there wasn't so much traffic on Conant, in 10 years or 20 years, there'd be tumbleweed blowing through Mommy. And I know somebody, I think the former mayor might have said, we don't want to be like Toledo, which I found a little bit comical, but it was a little hyperbolic, but it was right. So I applaud you. And I'm sorry that you got all that heat. You must have some hella thick skin to deal with some of those, pardon my French, real assholes who sent those things to you.
Well, I've been doing this for 38 years, so this is nothing new. And if I truly thought that if I was maybe a much younger person who was afraid of losing my job, I might be a little more concerned. But at this point, I came home to a community. I've been this in every place I've ever been. I was never asked to leave, and I was never fired. So that should tell you something. And as controversial as decisions that I make are, for this kind of stuff, you would think that those kind of people don't keep their jobs. And when I did my doctoral dissertation, it was all about city managers and why they don't last in communities. And it's typically because they try to be caretakers instead of trying to be change agents. When they're change agents and they're good at doing it and trying to maneuver through those changes, they typically have longer tenures. That's how it works. And that's what my research shows. So,
A couple of layperson questions as we talk about and get hopefully lots of people to vote for Mommy. And by the way, you have very tough competition. I've never been there, but I've heard lots of good things about Edmonton. So you've definitely got the short end of the stick in this final four here.
Yeah, it's going to be hard.
The mayor and Margo were here maybe 5 weeks or so ago, and I said, give me a percent that the project in Uptown is done. And I think he said like 87%.
We're down close.
Are we a little bit further? And I think we're still waiting for the fondue spot to open, but what percentage these weeks later would at it? Oh, it is good. Good, good.
Yeah, it's open. I've ate at it. It's great.
Good.
Actually wonderful.
What percent would you put at the completion rate here? How can we see the finish line?
Oh, I think you're going to see, somewhere in early August, it'll be done uptown.
Excellent. What personally of the project are you, maybe you and your family, most excited about?
Well, I think one of the things, I think one of the offshoots, you just mentioned it, was the Uptown Fondue and Wine Bar. I mean, that, you know, as a former builder, I can tell you, I looked at that building. This is part of the whole Strong Towns concept. We did not want that to be a vape shop or a check cashing store. The only way we can control that the best is to own it. The company offered it for us to $325,000. We bought it. And then I actually sketched up on a drawing and gave it to an artist. They sketched this up and tell me what this will look like as how I'm visiting this porch with the fireplaces and everything else. And they did. And then I asked council, I said, we have an opportunity here. I think that because every time I've ever done a road diet like this and fixed up a downtown, we had plenty of people wanting to locate there. The action breeds action.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. So we fixed this up, and Sean and Megan took the inside and did what they needed to do. But we made that outside look exactly like it. We did that as a city. We rent it to them for a purchase to buy, and then we'll go to another building if we can, because it's us standing up and taking notice and deciding to do something instead of sitting back. Because in my opinion, if you're not moving forward, you're dying.
Yeah, completely agree. And if this wasn't an inconvenience for people, most people who likely did not even live where they were complaining about, this wouldn't even have been the mushroom cloud that it was, because like you just mentioned it, we want to attract people to downtowns and rebuild, and Toledo has certainly done that. It is a magnet for so many things now. There are people probably who are not doing enough data on their own to see if their business can be supported, but they're zooming downtown. But everybody was all for it, because except for redoing Summit Street a couple of years ago for the Solheim, nobody has really gotten bent out of shape like they did with the people who are just trying to get through Conant, and they didn't even live there again.
Well, and you know, you have a higher traffic count in Conant than you do on Summit Street. So we have about 26,000 trips a day, which is high. But our issue here is I applaud downtown Toledo for what they're doing, what the city fathers of Toledo are doing, because and others that are doing this stuff, because I got to tell you, when I look at a strong towns component, downtowns, even if they're not to the shape you like them to be, prove to be the most economically efficient use of infrastructure you can find in the country.
Yeah.
Because the development is denser. It uses its infrastructure more efficiently, where you go out into a township, that just isn't the case. It just isn't.
And there's a halo effect, right?
Yeah. You're right. You're absolutely right.
I'm super excited. I lived downtown in St. Clair Village, and I moved here in 2013. So I got to see a lot of the nascent things that were coming to downtown, and I'm happy to see where it is now. And I would see a lot of complaints of like, well, why aren't you fixing up, you know, Vistula? Why are we leaving, you know, this sidewalk in the old West End and focusing all this on downtown? And again, it's to your point. And one of the things that I'm super excited about now, it had a good place in my heart as sometimes I'd walk the dogs over there. I'm so excited to see what the old South End is going to be built into now. They have their own arch. And I do think whether it's Vistula or the old South End, everybody raves about the old West End and the lifestyle there. I think one of those two neighborhoods, maybe the old South End, are going to be a carbon copy of the people that have such neighborhood pride. And that's not going to happen if downtown isn't where it is.
You're right. And I got to tell you, the South End, the culture in the Latino community there is incredible. I mean, that's a basis that nobody can match. Not even us.
Yeah, it's...
I'm quite frankly a little jealous.
I love it. I've moved around a lot of places, and I don't say this with any derision, but this is the least diverse place I've ever lived. And I'm from Philadelphia, lived in Florida, lived in Detroit. We have a lot of black and white people here. So I am excited that people are discovering or will discover what you just talked about in the old South End as that continues to blossom. My one last question before I ask you to stump for some votes. Is there anything that over the last couple of years, whether it's a statement, a message, something you might like to redo, like something you went home and thought, you know, maybe could have worded that a little bit better, communicated it just a bit better?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm the kind of person who just, like a bull in china shop, I just do what I'm told to
Me
do,
too.
And I do the creative thing, and I work hard at doing it. But sometimes when you're spending your time doing, you have less time to communicate it. Even though I do talk to small groups, I think town hall meetings are the death of us, because I think it gets out of control, and no orator can control that. That's why I meet with small groups of people, have coffee, invite them out, go to people's houses and stuff. I spread this message that way. But when we brought on Nancy, we knew that we had to communicate this better. We had to have somebody full time that was actually making these connections. That's been a fantastic hire, because quite frankly, I can't do it all. And we are understaffed as it is. I mean, we can come up with ideas. We can pull off infrastructure projects. We can believe in equity for black and brown people and other marginalized populations. I believe in all that stuff, and I love to do it. Nobody, it sometimes isn't mean anything unless I can get people like you and people that are influenced on your people to understand that that's what Maumee's about. It's not the same old Maumee. I had somebody the other day say to me, gosh, it feels like, and I love Perrysburg. This is no cut to Perrysburg. They said, oh my gosh, it seems like Perrysburg for years, Maumee was just slowly dying, and Perrysburg is this really progressive community, and now it seems to be the opposite. And that came from a Perrysburg resident, and I'm thinking, is that really the way it is? And is that how people perceive it? And now there's a lot of people in Perrysburg don't like our road diet. They think it somehow inconveniences them, and somehow Maumee is only on the face of the earth to make sure people can get back and forth between communities. Assuming, of course, nobody lives in Maumee and cares about it. but that's what I'm saying. I think that there's those things where people, that we as human beings need to be a bit more cognizant of our surroundings, right? We don't do that. We go through life with blinders on it, like we're a train. Somebody tries to get on our train, we knock them off accidentally, even if we know they're getting on the train. So
you are asking humans to rewrite their DNA, and that's why I spend a lot of time on my couch with my dogs, because they can be more understanding and less selfish.
They love you unconditionally.
Stump for some votes. So, and I know there have been lots of jokes, and I've found many of them funny, and I think they're actually pretty good natured. So we can not maybe get another arch up that says strongest town in the country.
Well, probably not going to get another arch up. They're expensive, and even the arches aren't, they're half aesthetic, but half about creating vertical and horizontal edge friction so that people travel slower. You drive through a tunnel, you go slower than if you're in an open-air road, right? So our issue is we want people to recognize that Maumee will continue to be a work in progress, right? When you do nothing and you just get by day to day, you actually are dying.
Mm-hmm.
You're always going downhill. We're always doing that, right? People work out because they recognize that, oh my gosh, tomorrow I'm a day older and I'm sagging a bit more than I want to, or I don't feel as strong as I used to. So they work out. We're flexing our muscles here to try to be the community we can be and create spaces and operate in spaces that we haven't operated before, whether it means human equity, whether we believe in infrastructure efficiency, whether we believe that our population needs to reflect the people we serve in terms of diversity. Those things are all important. And we're going to keep doing that. And we believe that we're the community to get this award because I see other communities that will do a project or two. Our whole philosophy, you even heard it from Jim McDonald, our mayor. He said it in his State of the City address, is that we center this around a strong towns philosophy. I couldn't say it better than that, because when you make a decision based on a vision that you're doing, every decision you make is weighed against that vision, you have a better chance of not being knocked off the tracks.
Well, here's to kicking some Edmonton, Alberta butt. It's strongesttown.com, correct?
Yes.
Awesome. Patrick, this was great. I'm sorry we haven't run into each other sooner. I like having Margo as the proxy. I am, if she didn't tell you, I am her number one and perhaps only reader of her entire email that comes out every Monday.
I read it.
It's the two of us. We sit back, we take a half an hour and blow through all the stuff that she likes to share.
I think she does a great job, too,
she
by
does.
The way.
She does. Patrick, thanks so much for the time. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
Bye-bye.